Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. We're going to begin, as always, with the latest on health and healing to empower people. We're going to be able to prevent some oral cancer cells from manifesting using black seed. I'll give you the lowdown on that. Then we're going to talk about cola, maybe bad to the bones, by Serena Gordon of Health Day Reporter. We're going to talk about soaking potatoes before frying cut suspected carcinogen. But why fry them at all? But we'll give you that. And also how you can lower your risk of diabetes with the omega-3 fatty acids and much more. From our environmental segment today, mega drought. It's more than just a lack of rain by Weekend Edition Counterpunch Robert Hunziker. And I'll explain what that means and how we're in a mega drought right now. And in fact, it's been warmer now than it has over the last 600 years. And it's going to get a lot worse. Also, were you aware of a nuclear waste dump on the shore of the Great Lakes? Dr. David Suzuki from EchoWatch explains. Of course, their rationalization is there's no problem because dilution in water creates a solution. Excuse me, but nuclear waste can stay radioactive for 100,000 years. Therefore, you should never have nuclear waste in water. We'll give you the latest on that. We have a lot of people listening from the Great Lakes area, from Michigan and Illinois, so and New York State. We'll tell you all about that. From our public health segment today, I'm on the road, but I do reach my office a couple times a day, and we've had a lot of people say what I addressed, the comments made on 60 Minutes about billionaires being praised because of all their philanthropic work. And the keystone example was the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation support of polio, and as the woman on the air reported, this has virtually helped eradicate this major disease. Therefore, it shows you what can happen when very wealthy people address these health issues. Really? Well, Paul Fassa of Natural Society begs to disagree. I disagree. In fact, there's nothing but lies, omissions, and propaganda causing death and paralysis. Now, look at it a different way. We're accusing the Melissa and Bill Gates Foundation and their pharmaceutical partners of spreading polio, not eradicating it. Also, from our public health segment, when was the last time you got a manicure, pedicure? Do you ever think that you could be making yourself susceptible to hepatitis B and C? You could. A closer look at salons. From LifeScript.com, Charles Downey. Today, I'm going to share some insights about how they're creating more laws to target the homeless. And it's happening at a dramatic level around the United States. What does this mean? Well, just to give you an example, what it means is, let's say you're poor and you're sitting, doing nothing, just sitting on a bench, public space. You could get a fine of $1,000 and 6 months in jail. That's right. And what does it cost when the city decides, let's show these poor people they shouldn't be on the streets? The average cost for jail stays for a homeless person is $16,670. Well, that doesn't make any sense because now they've got a criminal record. How is a person that's homeless supposed to go out and work? Oh, I forgot. The police, the mayor, the city council, the aldermen. They don't care. They're just mindless drones. All they do is what they're told or what the politics dictates. The actual suffering of a human being is indifferent to them everywhere. So I'm going to nail this today because it's gotten to an epidemic level. So we'll address that. Also, I have advocated for a long time for a flat income tax, and I've given the reasons why. Here's one more reason I'll go into this in greater depth today. The income tax code now has 70,000 pages. 70,000 pages. Yep. And I'll give you the latest on that and why we should abolish the IRS, abolish all income taxes. There shouldn't be a tax on your income in any case. If you had any reason, you'd understand that. But we have a reaction, not reason. That's why we're in the mess as we are today. So I'll tell you what we could do to bring in about $5 trillion a year, more than what we do, save about $3 trillion, all with a new way of looking at it. And who should pay taxes and at what level? Also, if time permits, I'm sure many of you heard President Obama's speech where he said, hey, good news, quote, we're more stable and less violent than ever. Really? Quote, we have stability. We have substantially improved the tranquility of the global community. Well, shucks. We're going to share some insights that are going to challenge that. And I've asked for my opinion on what's happening in the conflict in the Middle East. I'm holding that for a special, two-hour special, with some of the world's greatest minds, tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Now, normally it would be on tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, which is the most downloaded radio program that I do. But we've moved it from Monday night to Tuesday night. And so I will do a two-hour special tomorrow evening on the Middle East. And I'll be having people on playing clips that you have not heard or not aware of by any of the mainstream media, and also show you how absolutely in the pocket the mainstream media is of the special interest groups. We have a lot to share. Let's start. I've mentioned many times for people with hepatitis, people with dementia, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, especially ALS, macular degeneration, arthritis, bursitis, fibromyalgia, you should be taking black cumin seed oil each day. There's a lot of reasons why. Let me share a few from Dr. Ali Hassan, medical doctor, as published in Green Med Info. And about a teaspoon twice a day is terrific for you. According to the Institute of Biochemistry and Biotechnology in Taiwan, they have found that the compounds in the black cumin seed, it's called Nigella sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A, or black seed oil, it's simpler. It elicits cytotoxic effects on various squamous cancer cell lines through various mechanisms. Quite simply, if you're looking at a malignant strain of the squamous cell carcinoma, it can cause the cells to commit suicide. That's neat. That's important. The induction of cell death. And so that's just the latest reason why you should be taking this. So let's start taking our black cumin seed oil. There's an ancient medicine that's been used for centuries, millennium. And it works for diabetes. It's called ginger. I grow ginger. Ginger can grow 20 feet high. And gives off a wonderful flower, a white flower, great aroma. You mix it around your house if you grew ginger, lilac, lavender, honeysuckle, and chrysanthemums. You'd have just a nonstop night smell that would just be aromatic and very relaxing. But it's in its root, the ginger root. The taller the plant, the longer the root. And what we have found now is that ginger can help with proper insulin release, lipid metabolism, and is great at being an anti-hyperglycemic agent, meaning it keeps hyper or elevated blood sugar, keeps it down. And Ayurvedic medicine uses it to help with diabetic control of sugar, and it also helps improve their functioning of the hearts. Now, the most active ingredient, according to Natural Society, in ginger are the pungent principles, what are called gingerols and shogols. Ginger has shown outstanding protective effects on the diabetic liver, the kidneys, the eyes, and reduces neural symptom complications. It is also highly bioavailable. It's very superior. It gets into the system easily and goes to work right away. So if you're a pre-diabetic or a diabetic, start taking yourself, make your own ginger ale. How would you do that? It's simple. You take two drops, that's it, just two drops of stevia. And you add in some, what I like to do is I get some fresh ginger and I juice it. So I put the juice of about 2-inch piece of ginger. So you blend in your whatever amount it is of the ginger juice with the stevia. Add in a little bit of vitamin C and 100 milligrams of resveratrol. And then you dilute that with about 16 ounces of your favorite juice. Now, it might be grapefruit, orange. I like Concord grape. And then you drink that throughout the morning. It is terrific for stabilizing blood sugar, helping with nausea, help with indigestion. All good, and especially for diabetics. I remember one of my very first debates, and I wasn't aware of how down and dirty they can get. I was on a national tour. This is 1972, and I was flying in after about 33 days on the road. I was flying from Los Angeles to Atlanta. That was the final stop on a tour before I came back to New York. I get in on the red-eye special, meaning you get in around 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Went right to the television studio. Needless to say, you don't look very good when you get up. You've been up all night on an airplane, and then you go right to a studio. And so as I walk in, this guy comes up to me and he says, "Are you ready for the bloodletting?" And I said, "What bloodletting?" "Yours." I said, "What?" I was told I was doing a discussion on health. "Yeah, you are. With a panelist of 5 doctors, man, they set you up." And he said, "You know this is the home of Coca-Cola, don't you?" I said, "Yes." "Atlanta?" He said, "Well," he said, "they intend to make you look bad because they don't want you becoming the next Ralph Nader." I said, "Okay." I said, "How much time do I have? I just want to go in and shave and wash up." He said, "You got 5 minutes." So I had no time to prepare anything. This was one of those ambush journalism shows. So I went in and sat down. Here are all these doctors, all with thick notepads. So for the entire show, all I had was challenges, where one after another was talking about how don't trust these, you know, unqualified, uncredentialed people running around talking about health and nutrition. They don't know what they're talking about. And then they would show their degrees and medical degrees. And I only had a chance to speak at the very end, but I realized that there's no way I could win a debate dealing with the merits that they were proposing. So I simply suggested that if they believed that a Coca-Cola or any other cola was good for you, and that's fine, that's their business, but look what it does. It takes rust off nails. You can clean chrome with it. It's highly caustic. It's highly acidic. It can take the enamel off your teeth, because someone I knew was drinking cola all the time and their enamel was gone. The dentist said that it was because they were always drinking these colas. And there was also a lot of sugar in it. And we knew that sugar in the amount that was being consumed at that time was way above what it should have been. In any case, it was, and I made a few other important points, just common sense point. And then the show was over. And I was standing out on the curb waiting for a cab to go to the airport. And about 10 minutes later, this truck drives by and stops, looks, and says, "Hey, I just saw you on television, didn't I?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You know something? I'm thinking this guy didn't know what he's saying, but you just gave some common sense things, and it just made sense. And it's clear that all these doctors were defending cola because, Well, this is the heart of Coca-Cola. And it gets back to the idea that you don't have to be a scientist. You don't have to have a PhD or an MD in order to share the truth. Cola was bad then. It's bad today. Here's the latest from Serena Gordon, Health Day reporter. Mind you, this is mainstream. Quote, while enjoying a cola or two every night might seem harmless enough, recent research suggests that those tasty drinks could be compromising your bone health. Quote, there's enough evidence that high consumption of soda and carbonated beverages is associated with somewhat lower bone mass in children, and that's a real concern that people should be aware of. End quote from Dr. Lawrence Rez, director of the University of Connecticut Center for Osteoporosis. The exact mechanism behind the problem isn't clear, but experts believe that drinking soda, particularly colas, affects bone density in several ways. And one reason may be that people who drink colas are simply less likely to get enough calcium and vitamin D in their diets because the soda is replacing more nutritious beverages. And the third possible explanation focuses on one of the ingredients found in colas, phosphoric acid. Phosphoric acid can cause imbalance in the body as the body seeks to neutralize the acid with calcium. If there isn't enough calcium in the diet, the body will take calcium from the bones. So, good. Finally, they're catching on. Elevated liver enzymes, which a lot of Americans have, tens of millions have, according to Science Daily, is associated with a higher future death rate. Quote, a new population-based epidemiological study has found that elevated liver enzymes discovered during routine medical care are associated with higher future death. Now, liver enzymes and higher concentrations of the blood tend to indicate liver disease. About 10% of Americans have an elevated liver enzyme. That would put about 33 million. With no evidence of cause such as hepatitis C or excessive alcohol consumption. It's also called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. By the way, there's your high fructose corn syrup. So now studies have shown that this was at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and other places as well, that if they're high, you're going to die sooner. So what is the solution? Well, the solution is to do a liver cleanse, to do natural chelation. Give the more oxygenated food that you have, watercress, parsley, kale, collard greens, mustard greens, all of those are great for the liver. Watermelon, lemons, phenomenal for the liver. Beet juice with a cucumber and celery, great for the liver. Clean water, really good for the liver. So, and then reduced glutathione is also good, and alpha-lipoic acid. Saw this in Health Day about, quote, soaking potatoes in water before frying cuts down on the formation of the suspected carcinogen acrylamide. According to a new British study, acrylamide is created when starch-rich foods are cooked at high temperatures, like frying, baking, grilling, or roasting. And some of the research has suggested that acrylamide, which is found in a wide range of foods, is harmful and cause cancer in animals. But they found that you could reduce by 23% the acrylamide if you soaked it in water before frying it. Okay, let's take a look at that from a different perspective. Here's how I would read that. For 50 years, we've been eating French fries in the United States in huge quantities. None of them have been cooked this way. They all are loaded with acrylamides, and more often than not, a person doesn't just have French fries. French fries is the side item. The main item is a hamburger. In that hamburger, the grilling of the meat from multiple meat sources, you could have as many as 1,000 cow pieces of meat in your hamburger, and much of that's going to be with antibiotics and growth-stimulating hormones and pesticides. But in any case, you already have one cancer-causing agent that's loaded with saturated fat that creates arachidonic acid, which creates pain and inflammation in your brain, in your heart, in your joints, in your muscles. Now you're taking in something that is loaded with sodium, French fries, acrylamides, which cause cancer, and gross inflammation. So now you've got two known carcinogens. Now, if you're the average person, you're going to have an artificial sweetened beverage or a sugar-sweetened beverage, another carcinogen. And when we wonder why we have an epidemic of cancer, we don't look at the reality of how we eat. So now by saying, rinse your French fries, soak them in water, what they're not saying is you've been exposed to cancer all these decades of your life if you've been eating French fries. But it still leaves you no matter how you cut it, leaves you with a 77% chance of developing cancer, or it's still carcinogenic by 77%. That's not a good percentage. Yes, you were able to neutralize it down, but the sodium you're using on it is going to affect your blood pressure. The fact that there's no real good fiber in it is going to affect constipation, and it still can contribute to colorectal cancer. And it's hydrogenated fats, which add in extra calories and cause inflammation. So it's interesting how they think that's good news. I'm saying, no, it just highlights how bad things have been. And finally, the omega-3 fatty acids are now linked with lower diabetes risk. This is from Reuters, and it's a major study from Harvard University where they examined 3,000 older individuals in this heart study program, and they found that those who took the omega-3 fatty acids had a lower risk of diabetes. So between 1,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day is the key. And that way you can get your omega-3s. And the good news is that you can reduce your risk of diabetes and heart disease in the process. Nice to have you with us, everyone. To our environmental segment now. Two reports out today. One is called Mega Drought. It's from Counterpunch, Robert Hunziker. Here's what it says, quote, according to the assessment of Southwest Climate Change, the Arizona Institute of the Environment, of 5 decades from 1950 to 2000 were the warmest in over 600 years. The report predicts that reduced snowfall and increased evaporation from global warming will lead to more drought. And droughts are a natural part of climate cycle. But, quote, California is already burning up. And, quote, is an intensified mega drought and works for the United States. Markedly, to a degree, America depends on California for its food. So here's where it gets interesting. Quote, up to half the nation's fruit, vegetables, and nuts are grown in the Central Valley, one of the most fertile growing regions between Los Angeles and Sacramento. This is according to Stephen Neslage. California drought threatens food supply of all Americans, collapsing aquifers, sinking land. Furthermore, as an aside, how will someone in Los Angeles, San Francisco react when hopping into an AM shower, the water barely dribbles out of the faucet? That would be a new twist on California's famous ride-sharing on its slow-moving heated highways, traveling to and from work. Well, the studies revealed that persistent periods of drought last a long time. And in the Southwest, now what I mean by the Southwest, so people who have not been out there may not appreciate it. We're talking about Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, California, Arizona. But also, we have to go over towards Colorado and Kansas and Oklahoma. Those are the ones that are worst affected. On the East Coast, you're going to see Georgia, all 80% of Florida, certainly northern Florida. The only place that gets adequate rainfall and has adequate reservoir is southwest Florida, down around Naples and Fort Myers. But the East Coast, bad shape. And then Alabama, really bad off. Some states have plenty of water. They don't have a problem. But for those other areas, it's only going to get worse. And then you're going to see them not be able to grow the water, grow the food based upon a lack of water. Now, Nestle's has a contract with an Indian reservation that it can pump unlimited amounts of water where everyone else is restricted. And there's a major drought in that area. But because they have this contract, they are allowed to do it. It shows you the lack of ethics in big businesses. And or at least in those big businesses that choose not to have ethics. And so I would say for 80% of Californians, you're going to find in the next 5 years you're running out of water completely. I mean 100% bone dry. Unless you have between $500,000 to $1 million per well, because you're going to have to go down, way down, to hit a deeper aquifer. And you're looking at 2,000-3,000 feet down, and they get very expensive. And so who could afford that? Well, I guess a gated community could afford it. Let's say a vineyard could afford it. There will be people who will go down to those deep aquifers. They'll be all right. Everyone else won't be. But then you're going to have to look at massive drop in the value of property. The entire real estate market in California is going to collapse in drought areas. You're going to have a place for people to live. What's going to happen when upwards of 40% of the vegetables are no longer able to be grown in fruits and nuts in California? And also, we're running out of water. The largest aquifer in the United States, the Agua, runs under 7 states. It's running dry as well. So again, this is a big issue. I keep talking about it, and people listen, but very few people seem to be making any changes because of it. Here is something that we need to know. This is from Dr. David Suzuki of EcoWatch. Quote, a nuclear waste dump on the shore of the Great Lakes. Is dilution really the solution to pollution, especially when it's nuclear waste? A four-member expert group told a federal joint review panel it is. The panel is examining an Ontario Power Generation proposal to bury low- and intermediate-level nuclear waste from the Darlington, Pickering, and Bruce nuclear plants in limestone at the Bruce site in Kincardine beside Lake Huron. According to the Toronto Star, the experts reported that 1,000 cubic meters of contaminated water could leak from the site, although it's highly, quote, improbable. But even if it did leak, they argued, the amount is small compared to Lake Huron's water volume and the quantity of rain that falls into it. If the materials were instead buried in Canadian Shield granite, any leaking waste would be diluted by active streams and marshes, the experts claim. Hence, the volumes of the bodies of water available for dilution at the surface are either immense, like Great Lakes, or actively flowing. So their idea is, quote, dilution capacity is significant. Excuse me, but the fact that you got four people who are experts that you can buy for the nuclear industry to say all good things doesn't mean it's true. In point of fact, the Stop the Great Lakes Nuclear Dump Group has more than 62,000 signatures on a petition opposing the dump. Many communities around the Great Lakes, home to 40 million people, have passed resolutions against the project, including Toronto and Hamilton, Niagara Falls, Kingston, Thunder Bay, Windsor, and local governments in the states of Michigan, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Minnesota, Wisconsin, New York, and Ohio. The United Tribes of Michigan represent 12 First Nations also opposed. Michigan's Senate recently adopted resolutions urged President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry and U.S. Congress to intervene for the International Joint Commission, the Great Lakes Commission, and all Great Lakes states in Ontario and Quebec to get involved. So now's the time, if you live in these areas, stop the Great Lakes from being polluted. Because once that radiation's in there, it lasts forever. It will not dissipate for 100,000 years. That means the fish are going to be polluted, the water's polluted, but hold on. People use that water for drinking, irrigation. That's right. We don't want to go there because they're never right. They're always wrong when it comes to projecting how safe it is. So don't allow them to do it. Now for our public health segment. I'm sure many of you were watching last night when a group of narcissists, megalomaniacs, and some people, I'm sure, believe are sociopaths, talk about how great they are, where they give money and the world is a better place, and don't let the government do it, we'll do it better. And the example they used was when a woman was talking about the Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation and the eradication of polio. Well, we beg to differ on that. Paul Fassa of Natural Society has done a great deal of research on this, and his research is meticulous. And it shows that recent mass oral polio vaccinations among young children in India and Pakistan have been covered in the mainstream media, and they held it as a final answer to the nation's polio epidemic. And you'll see claims of outrageous success about how polio has been greatly reduced ever since the program of mass polio vaccination began a few years ago. Now, this campaign is initiated by the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, and it's partially funded by $1.3 billion from the Bill and Melissa Gates Foundation. Now, it primarily targets recently the areas of India, Pakistan, Nigeria, and the Philippines. But the tales of success are tainted with partial truths and important factual omissions and big lies. So let's take a look at this in depth now. Because the oral polio vaccines have been banned in most Western industrial nations for a simple reason. They cause polio paralysis. But these polios are called other names, thus making it seem like regular wild virus polio as reduced or eradicated through the live polio viruses. And hence, we don't have a problem. But hold on a second. When you take one of these live polio viruses, they can fester and recombine in the digestive system to come out stronger in the feces. This process lasts for a few weeks. The root of the contagion viral disease, including polio, in developing nations stems from poor waste removal with drinking water also used for bathing. Many of the 5 years of age and younger children given mass oral polio vaccination did wind up bathing in village drinking water. The result has been an epidemic, absolute epidemic, of vaccine-associated polio paralysis and acute flaccid paralysis reported by the Indian Journal of Medical Ethics. In India, during 2011, almost 40,000 such cases arose, and the numbers rose regionally in proportion to the oral polio vaccine doses administered to children and leading to paralysis and death, more so than wild polio virus. So let's ask the question, do we actually have a polio epidemic? In 2010, there were only 42 cases of wild virus polio reported in India. Mind you, they have 1.32 billion people, and they had 42 cases. In fact, around 2005, before this recent, the oral polio vaccine program, India had declared that polio was no longer a health priority, and the facts found that only 1% of polio victims became paralyzed, and that safe and expensive megadose vitamin C could treat polio have been hidden from view for almost everyone. Statistically, children infected with this by oral polio vaccines are twice as likely to die as those infected with the wild polio virus. And worldwide, the cases have risen steadily from 1996 to 2010 in those individuals who have received the vaccine. So under the umbrella, there are poliomyelitis, transverse myelitis, and other enteroviral encephalopathy, traumatic neuritis, and others. That's what we're getting from the vaccine. But the wild poliovirus? No, there's no epidemic anywhere. And while India celebrated the so-called eradication of polio in early 2012, the statistics ignored by the world mass media, apparently changing the name of polio-like diseases caused by vaccination does work for the unquestioning. Back in Pakistan, where the program continued, up to 30 healthcare workers administered the oral polio vaccine have been killed by villagers over the recent 2 years. Seems the word got around to enough of those villagers. But not here. The mainstream media won't question the sacred cow of vaccines, especially with polio, not lining up and rolling up their sleeves or handing your children over to the medical authorities is the way that Americans work. So they are wrong, We do not have an epidemic, but when we do look at the kids that got polio and paralyzed from it, the largest number of kids getting polio and paralyzed or dying were not from the wild polio virus, but from the polio vaccine. Also from our public health segment today, very few people question the safety of getting a manicure or pedicure. But Charles Downey of LifeScript.com says, hold on, can salons spread infection? In 1965, a medical researcher managed to trace several cases of hepatitis B back to a barber who unintentionally transmitted the disease by shaving all the patients with the same razor. Now, the barber had used a disinfectant, but it wasn't strong enough to kill all the germs. In those days, many of the serious blood-borne diseases that plague us today, hepatitis B and C, were less prevalent or did not exist. Well, according to the Center for Disease Control, there are about 1.2 million Americans with chronic long-term hepatitis B, 3.2 million with long-term chronic hepatitis C. And these are spread by exposure to infected blood. And this most commonly happens in sharing infected needles, and also can happen sexually. Certain jobs, like those in the healthcare field, also put people at risk. But there's another cause, and that's the beauty salon. Texas dermatologist Shelley Sukula, MD, was looking closely at the sanitary practice of the cosmetology and barber industry and found conditions sadly lacking. Quote, nail and hair salons may be a source of blood-borne as well as other infectious diseases. And, quote, there is good evidence that razors, nail files, barber scissors, tattoo needles, and body piercing instruments are risk factors for transmitting hepatitis B and C. Other research shows that hepatitis B can survive outside the body for 7 days or more on chairs, headrests, workbenches, and instruments and tools. Dr. Sekula's interest in this area began when she saw one patient with a contagious fungal infection on her toes and feet. When questioned, the patient remarked she had noticed just one little cut after the pedicure, and the red warning flags went up. Quote, if I was going into a nail salon, I would look for a photo license of the operator. I would also ask about sterilizing procedures, and I would not permit an electric drill to be used on my nails. Nail drills were so fast, they can easily penetrate the nail and cut you. And you also should look at the type of things that they're using to sterilize it. It may not be enough. The best sterilization methods are steam, ethylene oxide gas, dry heat, chemical germicides, anything that can draw blood, nail clippers, cuticle scissors, callus paring blades, and reusable and straight razors should be soaked in a chemical germicide. Quote, however, most states only require cosmetologists and barbers to use a low-level hospital-grade disinfectant, which may or may not kill all the microorganisms. To be really safe, try bringing your own instruments. And don't be fooled by operators who wear masks, face masks. They are not protecting you. They're protecting themselves from breathing in fumes and nail dust. Gloves, though cosmetologists rarely wear them, latex gloves are another important safety precaution. So bring them and have them wear them. And make sure that things are sterilized. But what is the ultimate sterilization? Autoclave. Autoclave is, that will kill the germs. So here's what I would suggest. Just bring your own and so that you know that they're sterile and have not been infected. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a brief break. Come back. Have a lot to share with you, including some commentaries. Please stay with us.
There's something feel. It's something unreal.
I'd like to welcome you all. I'm Gary Knoll. This is about laws targeting homelessness. They've increased. From Evelyn Neves from Alternet. Quote, while homelessness is worse than ever in many places around the country, more and more cities are addressing the crisis by making it illegal to sleep, sit, or simply be in public. This decades-old trend is spreading even as the social safety net keeps shrinking and housing is at its most expensive. People with nowhere else to go are cited, arrested, and jailed for simply asking for donations, sitting on a park bench. Even though criminalizing activities that homeless people do to survive does nothing to end homelessness and cost more than it would to house them. So a study of 187 cities by the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, an advocacy group that has tracked the way cities address homelessness since 1991, the new report looks at the amount of homelessness, which is up tremendously. And now, in the last 3 years, there are laws that ban sleeping in cars. So if the only thing you own in your life is a car, it's against law for you to sleep in it, or any private vehicle. And the last refuge for many families that have lost their homes, and that has jumped by 116%. The increase in broadening of these laws means that more cities are handling their homeless crisis by essentially pushing society's most marginalized, reviled population out of sight. And while the UN Committee on Human Rights has found that such laws violate international human rights treaties, and the Ninth Circuit Court has found that people who have lost their homes should not be penalized for sleeping in their cars, the bans and penalties for violating them keep growing. The bleak findings, which come as income inequality, wage stagnation, and outright poverty has become endemic, suggest a compassion fatigue with no sign of abating. The laws are being passed by wide voter approval in cities that offer few or no alternatives for those living on the streets. Now, Palo Alto, California is an example. It's at the center of the high-tech boom. It only has a total of 15 beds serving the entire homeless population. And it's made sleeping in one's own private vehicle a crime. You'll go to jail for 6 months and be given a $1,000 fine if you're caught sleeping in your car. And Santa Cruz, California, where 83% of homeless people have no shelter options at all, has imposed bans on camping, sitting, or lying down in public, or sleeping in vehicles. Orlando, Florida, where 34% of homeless people are without shelter beds, prohibits sleeping or asking for food or being given food. Bans on food sharing or feeding homeless people are the latest trend in criminalizing laws. Of the cities surveyed, 17 have made it illegal for you to give any food to a homeless person. And if you do, you could go to jail. You could be fined. And many surveyed have had their possessions confiscated. And so now they're taking away what little possessions a homeless person does have. But did you know that 44% of all homeless people in the United States actually are employed? Yes, but they still don't have a place to sleep. Here is one suggestion. I have my own, but they actually did a study showing it costs $16,670 per person if you're going to put them in jail. Costs $11,000 if you give them an apartment, even with a social worker to help them. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, by providing housing, the city reduced spending on homelessness-related jail costs by 64%. Well, how about doing something that requires very little effort and would be a boom for local unemployed people who have skills? There's over 10 million square feet of government office space that's not used, federal and state. Why not rehabilitate this into places for people, to shelters for people, for families, have those for families, have them for single parents, and also having those social services, psychological counseling, interdiction counseling to help people who might be on drugs, post-traumatic stress disorder, or alcohol, and also have a daycare center for those who have children. Because otherwise, they're in a catch-22. Where do you put your child if you're trying to work? So that would be relatively easy to do, and yet we're not doing it. And finally, I believe that all it takes is some reason and common sense. $31 trillion is sitting in accounts outside the United States because they made their money in ways that they could, even in the United States, they made their money, but they have their corporate headquarters offshore in Luxembourg, in the Canary Islands, etc., so they don't pay any income taxes. Yet many of these industries were only able to exist because of the public spending through government grants and research that allowed them, especially in computers. But none of these major corporations spend a dollar of taxes in the United States, but they get all the benefits. They get social welfare. They get all these write-offs. Give them an amnesty. Charge a flat 20% corporate tax on all corporations in the United States because all the major corporations don't pay any taxes or very little. Then abolish the IRS. That would save billions of dollars per year. No more audits, no more IRS, no more keeping your records, no more penalties. Don't tax people's income. And then put a tax on all trades on Wall Street, 5%. 5% on every trade on Wall Street would bring in over $4 trillion a year. Then stop all subsidies to major corporations. That would save hundreds of billions a year. Now, I could go on, but just those alone would make an enormous difference. Then put sales taxes, small for those items that people need that are essential, and increasing to those that are luxury items. And that way, you have increased your income coming in, and you decreased your subsidies going out. Because right now, the income tax code is 70,000 pages. Yes, the report disclosed it takes Americans 7 billion work hours each year to complete the paperwork at a cost of over $165 billion a year to comply with income tax code. That's just obscene. It shouldn't be this way. In fact, today, individual income taxes are the top source of revenue, expected to amount to about $1.38 trillion. And then Social Security insurance taxes, $1 trillion. And corporate income taxes are just $380 billion. And excise taxes, $93 billion. So if you reverse and have one flat tax, you would suddenly make up all the difference that's needed and wouldn't be overtaxing people, but have a revenue stream. Because if you're wealthy, you can hire the accountants and tax lawyers to evade or avoid taxes. I want you to hear something now. Oh, by the way, my progressive commentary hour, which is normally heard this evening at 7 p.m. and has been for 10 years, we're moving it to Tuesdays. It'll be on tomorrow evening, same time, 7 p.m. It'll be a two-hour special. But I want to share something with you now. I want to play a piece from a 22-year CIA expert, a person in the field. He was an operative. And here he is before a congressional committee where he's not giving them the answers they want. You rarely hear this kind of exchange. So here it is.
We're pleased to be joined here today by six distinguished witnesses to discuss this important topic. First, Dr. Michael Shiron is an adjunct professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. Dr. Shiron recently concluded a 22-year career with the CIA, where there Dr. Shiron held multiple positions, including senior advisor for the Osama bin Laden department. We're very pleased to have you and honored, sir.
I would certainly, if I was in charge, change many of the policies we have. But it's more important that we in this country become adults. Nothing a person does in his life doesn't have a counter-reaction. Does our foreign policy cause this war? Not a chance. The people who attacked us caused this war. Does our foreign policy motivate these people? Absolutely. Sir, if you were going to tell the American people they're fighting a war against a bunch of deranged, nihilist, fanatic extremists, we're going to be fighting a war that it's constantly going to surprise the American people about the costs of what they're doing. If we come to a place where we can have a discussion that says supporting Israel is essential to the U.S. security, supporting Saudi Arabia is important, vital to U.S. security, having U.S. troops in Muslim countries is vital to U.S. security, fine. But also tell the American people that costs come with that. Right now, we've spent 17 years in this war, and the American people still think we're fighting a bunch of long-haired, bearded, goat-eating madmen. And we're at a terrible disadvantage that we impose on ourselves, sir. And I would finish a too long a statement by simply saying that we must stop the idiocy of democracy spreading. If you want to fight forever, keep trying to impose women's rights, secularism, the paganism of American culture, contemporary culture, on a religious civilization, sir.
I wanted to make a comment. Professor Troy, I've known you over the years, but I have to take sharp disagreement with your position about our support of Israel. I believe it is essential that the United States, for our security, continue to support Israel. I believe that if we back away from Israel or Jordan, for instance, using those countries, Morocco, as examples, that Al-Qaeda will find some other excuse. I mean, we can find any number of reasons. I can tell you during the 1990s, it's from after Iraq, but between 1995 and 2001, the only time the Americans used force overseas was to defend Muslims against Christians in Bosnia and in Kosovo. And yet the response by Al-Qaeda to that was to attack us on September 11th. So I think we make a mistake if we think we can somehow appease Al-Qaeda by taking away whatever they're...
Not at all a matter of appeasement, Mr. King, at all. If it was up to me, I'd dump the Israelis tomorrow.
I know you would. I know.
But I have all I worry about is the continuing preaching of American politicians to the American people that our relationship with the Israelis doesn't cause us to have dead Americans and extraordinary expenses in fighting the Muslim world.
I would just say we would have more dead Americans if we didn't stand by our allies in the Middle East.
Well,
we'd just be encouraging Al-Qaeda to take advantage of us. I think that...
Our allies in the Middle East are mostly totalitarian, sir, and they have been for 50 years.
There are not that many good people in the world. The fact is you have to work with those who work with us. And if I had the choice between dealing with the Israelis and Al-Qaeda, I work with Israel. If I had the choice between dealing with Jordan or Al-Qaeda, I'd deal with Jordan. And the fact is that you can find any number of excuses why Al-Qaeda is going to come after us.
No, sir, you can't.
Yes, I think you can.
No, you can't,
can.
Sir.
You certainly
Osama bin Laden would have been a terrific American politician because he stays on message. There's only one message that comes out of Al-Qaeda, and it's
that's the message they're using now. If it's not that, if we pull out of Israel, if we
you
stop
have
supporting,
to depend.
No, I'm going to say if we stop supporting Israel, then the message would be
you have
America,
to,
America was cowardly, America was backed away, they're not going to stand by their allies. It can always, it's the flip side of everything, and I would rather stand with positive elements like Israel and back up.
I'm a bear of little brain, sir, but you got to go with what you go with at the moment. These people are fighting for something substantive, for something religious. And they're not fighting us for what reason do you suppose they're going to come up with? Because we have Hollywood? I would like to fight Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they're not going to fight us because we have women in the workplace. That's an insanity. What they're fighting us about is what we do. And we don't have to stop what we're doing, sir. But we have to realize the cost.
And I think it would be worse if we stopped what we're doing. And that's my point.
Well, that's fine. Tell the American people that.
It's also, of course, what you're asking for. And I think that cost would be a lot greater.
I don't think so, sir.
Well,
it couldn't be worse than it is now.
We disagree.
You're presiding over a bankruptcy. What can be worse? And what has been the goal of Al-Qaeda since it was formed? To bankrupt the United States. Who's winning today, sir? We're done like dinner.
We're winning and we'll continue to win unless we take the advice of people like
sir,
you.
Sir, you are exactly wrong.
Well,
we are losing. Two U.S. field armies were defeated by men in the field with weapons from the Korean War.
The fact is, we have not been successfully attacked since September 11th.
The fact is, sir, we had two military defeats overseas.
The fact is, we have not been successfully attacked since September 11th.
Sir, that's a goofy argument.
Like you.
That is a goofy argument, sir.
I hate to gavel down
I'm sure you're an expert on goofiness, so I yield back.
I appreciate the gentleman's spirited debate.
Again, I want to come back to understand some of the things you said. Before I do that, and I just want to mention this quickly, I find your position on our alliance with Israel as very troubling. It won't surprise you to tell you that I disagree with you. And you spent 17 years, is that right, or something like that, as a CIA analyst?
Over 20, sir.
Okay, over 20.
Not as an analyst, I ran operations, sir.
Okay. Are there Would you say there's a large number of CIA analysts or employees who agree with your position?
I wouldn't dare to speak for anybody but myself, sir. Well, only a fool would know that our relationship with Israel causes us war with Muslims.
Well, my question is fairly simple.
Yes, sir.
You worked with hundreds of employees.
Yes,
those,
sir.
You certainly
work with any fools, sir.
You certainly had conversations with many of them. I'm asking for your opinion of, are there a large number who agree with you on this?
I'm not a McCarthyite, sir. I'm not going to say anything about that to you, sir.
Okay, well, I'm going to take that as non-responsive because it's a fairly simple question, and I don't
think... It's fairly none of your business about what my conversations with other people are about, sir.
I'm not asking for specifics of those conversations. I'm asking for your opinion of your experience where there are a large number that agreed with you. That's a fairly simple question. Hardly intrusive.
A very intrusive. From my perspective, sir.
Well, okay, well, you can have your perspective.
Thank you,
I think,
sir.
Others can evaluate whether you're being agreeable or disagreeable.
I'm being disagreeable on this because
yes, you certainly are.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Now let me move on then. I would like you to explain very quickly, if you can, what you think the primary motivators are for Islamic jihadism.
First, our support for the Israelis.
Okay, that's your
second,
number. That's your.
No, it's there. There are six.
Okay, put them in order if you could.
Our support for tyranny for over 50 years in the Muslim world.
Okay.
As a trigger, our presence on the Arab Peninsula. Third, I would put the Israelis rising. Fourth, our ability for a long time to get oil at prices that were very much below the market level. Fifth, our presence, military presence in other countries in the Muslim world. And sixth, our abiding willingness to identify as terrorist any Muslim population that one of our allies dislikes, whether it's the Russians or the Chinese.
There is a person that you will not see in the mainstream media debating, 22-year veteran, ran operations to the CIA in that area of the world, knows what he's talking about, with legislators who are clueless. They're just ideologues, especially the one from New York. I'm Gary, and all that brings up the end of our program. I want to thank you for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And remember, there's no Progressive Radio Network tonight at 7. It's tomorrow evening when we're going to do a two-hour special on the Middle East. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Wow, that was pretty powerful. Interestingly, I just got an email here from an English couple, and they are teachers. And she says, we understand that you have over 30,000 listeners in the United Kingdom. And they said they know several people. They listen themselves, and they refer many, many people over the past 5 years. He says his wife really enjoys the information on health and the environment. He says, but I kind of like your commentaries or your political commentaries. Especially I like the anecdotal references in historical context. So his question is this, do you believe a person can become sociopathic, like a sociopathic personality, because of pain? And also, with your concept of psychopaths of Wall Street, obviously, I can almost tell him the answer to this, do you also believe in the psychopaths of the ruling parties?
They're from the United Kingdom?
Yes.
I'll use two examples. There was a Professor Keltner at the University of California, Berkeley, who showed that the wealthy are as a social power, paying almost no attention to the needs of those without power. And this has been historically true. But since we're talking about England, one of the most notorious sociopaths in history, a psychopath actually, was Henry VIII. And there were consequences to this because Henry VIII, his dad was Henry VII, the first Tudor monarch who seized the crown of Ireland and made himself Lord of Ireland and won the throne by defeating George III on the battlefield. His mom was Elizabeth of York, who was born of aristocracy. She was the eldest child of Edward IV, pure nobility. And then Edward Tudor from Lancaster, captured by York in the War of the Roses, imprisoned and died. And he only had one son, Henry VII, who was the father of Henry VIII. And so what you have is you have a consequence, a power in people who believe that all thoughts, all remedies should rest with them. And it was because of Henry VIII, who seemed to be normal, but he became king at 18. The entire court was run by teenagers. These people didn't come to the working class. They were all from noble families, from the aristocracy. And that's why he loved the home that he lived in for such a long period of time, Hampton Court. And he had a long marriage with Catherine of Aragon, who came from an extremely dignified background and was actually wealthier than the King of England. Her dad was Ferdinand II, the King of Sicily and the King of Aragon, and later the King of Castile, through the marriage with Isabel, who was the first and King of Naples. So, and they're best known, of course, for the discovery of the New World and sponsoring Columbus, who was a genocidalist and a complete racist, irrespective of how we would like to portray him today. And, in fact, Isabel's the first grandson was the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, and he was the financial brains of, or she was the financial brains of the kingdom with the reorganization of the government and lowering the debt. So they were very rich, very powerful, but she couldn't bear a child for Henry after 20 years, so he wanted a divorce. So he sent the second most powerful person in England, Cardinal Thomas Wolsey, who was the Lord Chancellor. He was the chief king advisor, and he's the one who actually ran the country because Henry VIII was too busy playing, and he couldn't get a divorce. So lo and behold, he decided it was time, and the Pope at that time was Pope Clement VII, and so Henry VIII had a council meeting and said, we're going to split from the Holy Roman Catholic Church, and he created the Church of England. And that led to all kinds of problems. But I'm looking at Northern Ireland. I'm looking at Southern Ireland. I'm looking at the fact that over a million people died in Ireland because of that. Remember the 1845 to 1852 Great Irish Potato Famine? The Irish didn't die because there was only potatoes to eat. That was nonsense. That's historical rubbish that only an idiot would believe. The point of fact was simple. 1 million died. 1 million immigrated from Ireland, reducing its population by 25%. Why? Because we're up to 50 shiploads of produce and livestock every day leaving Ireland for England. It was land acquisition from absent landlords and wealthy being subsidized constantly, and then taking what they had in Ireland and selling it in India. In England. Isn't it interesting? The American Choctaw Indians were so concerned about the starving Irish that they actually collected $700 back in the 1840s to send to the starving people. So what we have is we have the effects of those who feel that power should be with them, the sociopaths, who have no compunction in how they deal with people, the psychopaths, who believe because their title and position they have unlimited ability to do what they want. And then look at the consequences to the English people, look at the consequences to the Irish people, look at the consequences to the world with the British Empire. When you look at the British Empire, you look at the enslavement of people all over the world. When you look at the great opium wars, when you look at how India was colonized, all that we have today in the people on Wall Street, corporate boardrooms, the White House, the Supreme Court, and our entire judiciary. Little surprise there. Hope that answers your question.
Sure does.
Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. I'm getting big feedback here. Today we learn one of the lessons, the key lesson from the refugee crisis, that some huddled masses are not entitled to breathe free.
Interesting. We'll be with Utrice right now.